countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our March price calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
And now on Radio 1, time for this week's Countrywide with Marty Morrissey.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, Ella McSweeney visits a micro dairy in County Mayo. John Connell describes the lambing season on his family farm. And we meet John Keane, the president-elect of Machrana Fermor. But first, what is the future for rural Ireland? While a strategy for rural Ireland is being discussed nationally, I drove to one rural community, the Black Line area in County Cavan, to find out how they've been faring and why some residents believe they could be at a turning point for the better. I met Tina, who's moved back to Cavan from Dublin, Owen and Declan, who are concerned about the shortage of housing, but I began by meeting Tom Riley, well known in GA circles, while he was out tending his sheep.
Ho, 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 ho. Marty, we're here in Black Line. It's a border village, Belcouch, just across the bridge. It has suffered severely since the troubles, and it hasn't really recovered that well since. The schools are suffering, the football teams are suffering. 2 years ago, we were in the county final in the junior championship in Cavan. Five players have gone.
Where are they gone to?
One went to New Zealand, one is in Australia, which there's two working in London, and there's one in Canada, you know. Rural Ireland needs people to live in it, because if we don't, it'll be a wilderness, and we don't want that.
What about your colleagues from just across the border that you can literally kick a ball across? How are they coping with all of this?
The population is actually growing in Belcouch. You know, they're not far from Inniskillen. A lot of people comes out to live there. We haven't got that. We're kind of lost between Inniskillen and Sligo. We are on the, you know, the most northerly point of Cavan. Like.
Ah, here's Tina Dolan, a native of County Cavan. Hi, Tina, how are you?
Where I'm from in Glengevlin has seen a massive decimation of population, and that has been the real tragedy. But what I think is fascinating now is that we're facing a real opportunity for reflection on that, an opportunity to maybe restore the balance. We have cities that are overstretched and rural populations that are massively missing in just that people resources, and that what we could do is a win-win situation for all.
Tina, talk to me about your own story.
My move back here has been quite accidental. An opportunity to come up to what I thought was going to be somewhere that I could escape to in the summer, and I came down to restore an old cottage and basically haven't left.
And where were you for the last 20-25 years?
I was teaching in Dublin.
Do you miss Dublin?
You miss the level of services, you miss the spontaneity of what's available to you on your doorstep, you miss a number of things, but then they're also substituted by things that I have now that I didn't have there, like space, and particularly in the pandemic, it has been incredible with young children to come from a city centre existence to having the space to isolate with the comfort and safety of not having to kind of contain my family within a small unit. That has been the major advantage.
But you see a future for Black Line, do you?
I'd like to say that I see a future for rural Ireland, for Black Lion, for Glengevlin, for Swannanbar, for all of our local communities. You know, we are interested in working together. We are interested in attracting people, not just people home, but new people or people who are willing to look at opportunities that could take them out of the city. It's not for everybody, and we're not saying it's for everybody. We're saying it's a viable option, and with the correct support and infrastructure, we'd love to see more people giving it a go.
Declan Woods is an estate agent in Cavan Town. There's an undersupply of houses in the region. So how complex is this in terms of getting people back into rural Ireland, back into places like Black Lyon?
Throughout the country at the moment, we're experiencing an absolute undersupply of housing. So that's not unique to Cavan. It is currently cheaper to buy than it is to build. So it's not sustainable to build housing. And whilst that exists, we have a situation whereby developers, builders, etc., who haven't gone away, they just simply can't find that in areas like our region, that it's feasible to construct houses for the purpose of selling them. In the most of our county, social and affordable housing is the only, building that you will see. There's an exception in the east of the county, but they're being hamstrung because of infrastructural issues. So those are key points and key problems that we have. Now, heretofore, the situation was that there was, of course, the brain drain, as they would call it, where young people, because of the lack of employment, were moving away. But of course, we've now seen something dramatic happen over the course of the last 12 months. And I think that should give us some encouragement in rural Cavan and in rural Ireland. So if we start to see this reversal of the brain drain of people wanting to come home, the next big issue we'll have, Marty, is housing those people.
And housing those people, give me an idea of an average price house in Cavan, for instance.
Yeah, a three-bedroom semi-detached is usually the run-of-the-mill that people will look at when you talk about an average. And you're probably looking at average prices in Cavan at the moment at in and around 160-odd thousand, OK? Until we get to a point where a new build, three-bedroom semi, because of the modern regulations that are in place, is achieving somewhere north of 210,000, 220,000 euros, it's not going to be sustainable for a house to be built.
Owen McConnon works with Citizen Information, but in a past life was well aware of planning permissions in his native county.
20 years ago, or maybe a bit longer, you could pick a site anywhere you liked in the country, and that if it was suitable for planning permission, you were able to do that. And you build your house, and that was it. But that's all changed now. I think there's an overemphasis maybe on getting people to be urban dwellers rather than rural dwellers. And it's much, much more difficult now to get planning permission out in the country. And it's all to do, I suppose, with the infrastructures that are there. I mean, in town, you have your town's water supply, you have town sewage supply, you have your gas and you have your electricity. When you go out to live in the country, then you're in a situation where you have to develop all those yourself at a substantially extra cost as well.
I'm also thinking, Declan, that like we have people from all over the world now. Ireland is their home. They mightn't have been born and raised here, but they're now one of us. This is the beauty of diversity, and we welcome them. So how do they get settled in places like Black Lyon? How do they come to live in rural Ireland? Is there any solution for them?
Yeah, I mean, Marty, you've nailed another issue that's very pertinent. The emergence of names that wouldn't have been seen to be the Bradys and Rileys and Smiths, for example, in our region, there isn't a possibility at all for them to build their own dwelling. Their only hope is to find something that's a second-hand house or a house that's been built in a town for sale by a developer. We don't have any of those taking place at presently in this area.
I cannot believe I'm outside Nevin Maguire's restaurant. The place is closed up. I'm speaking to the man himself, and I can't get Nevin to do anything for me. Any chance of a sausage and bacon sandwich even?
Would you like that now? wouldn't I enjoy nothing more than cooking the full Irish breakfast for you with a nice mug of tea and some nice soda bread? Wouldn't that be lovely?
I'm starving as a result. Your restaurant obviously has been closed for some time.
Yeah, it has. It's been, you could say, kind of difficulty for everyone and for the staff. Like, we had 70 people employed. We've been closed more than we've been open over the last year. But, like, I kind of turned into a positive thing because more people are cooking at home. You know, I do miss my staff. I miss the engagement of customers. We've had to cancel over 3,000 bookings. But we'll get up and running again, please God.
Why not, Black Lyon?
Thank you.
And that, of course, was Nevin Maguire outside the shuttered McNean's House and Restaurant in the heart of Black Lyon. And thanks to everyone in Black Lyon County Cavan for the very warm welcome as well. Now, there are some 140 agri shows, which during normal times takes place annually across the country and have been a vibrant celebration of rural life for more than 200 years. The Irish Shows Association, or ISA, represent 133, or almost all, of these fixtures, and they have confirmed that their advising members not to run shows this year. We're currently under level 5 restrictions, but even at level 1, 200 to 500 people could gather outdoors, making most shows unviable. The ISA is, however, determined to keep the spirit of these colourful communities events alive. Catherine Cotter is PRO for the Irish Shows Association, and she joins me now. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Marty. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. We're delighted to have you indeed on this cold, frosty morning. You've waited as long as possible, Catherine, before advising your members on this year's shows, haven't you?
We did, Marty. I suppose 12 months ago, we found ourselves in the position of having to advise our shows not to run last year with the uncertainty that there was around the pandemic. And we never foresaw that we would be in the same position 12 months later. But unfortunately, with the lack of clarity that there is around when events will be allowed and under what regulations and restrictions they will be allowed, we had no choice but to go with the information that's available to us at the moment. And as you said in your introduction there, Marty, with the current restrictions, I don't think there's any way that shows can run. If that changes, of course, the advice will change throughout the year. But we've always, as an organisation at national level and at local level, we've always embraced any regulations that were required, and we've always worked well with the various government departments, and we're hoping that that will continue.
Of course, absolutely. Now, this is only advice. You don't actually have the power to cancel shows, do you?
No, we don't. It's just not the way our organisation is set up, because obviously the shows are their own independent bodies as well. And we do have, you know, we have such a number of shows right across the island, and with being a cross-border organisation as well, there's another level of difficulty and different restrictions both sides of the border.
Mm. And but, I was just going to ask you that there are different regulations in the north. Are the shows there likely to go ahead?
Very unlikely as well in the north. I think most of them have already made the decision to cancel. I suppose the biggest challenge there is that there's a huge lead-in time that goes into organising an annual show. And, you know, we always say that you start planning for next year's show when you close the gate on this year's, and that, you know, not having that clarity and the fear of putting in all of the effort, making that financial investment, and then being shut down again or having a local lockdown or something like that.
Yeah. No, it's heartbreaking, I know, for the people involved. You are getting some government assistance with the cost of insurance, though, aren't you?
Yes. So for a number of years, the Department of Agriculture have provided us with a grant to offset the cost of insurance for those shows that use our group scheme insurance. And that is continuing. And also for the last few years, we've received grant aid from the Department of Rural and Community Development, which we're very grateful for. And there was a grant issued last year, which has been ring-fenced, and we're hoping that that can be used for shows to help them to get started whenever they can make a comeback.
Now, I'm sure people listening to us this morning, Catherine, there'll be a lot of disappointed people, indeed volunteers, competitors, families who love the day out. Last year you ran a big virtual show. Any chance that this will happen this year?
We haven't made any decision on that yet, Marty, and I know that some of our member shows are looking at running virtual shows and various virtual events across the summer, and we'll give them every support. Whether there will be a national virtual show like there was last year, we haven't made any decision yet. So,
okay, take it day by day as the rest of us, and I know it's disappointing because those shows are so important to people, so a little bit of heartbreak, and but please God, we'll be back in time.
Absolutely.
Catherine Cotter from the Irish Shows Association, thank you so much for joining us here on Countrywide, and the situation will evolve over the course of the year, and you can get the most up-to-date information on the Irish Shows Association website, irishshows.org. Now, if you had to choose a new home, would you look for a state-of-the-art new build, or would you seek out a building with its own history and heritage? American writer Betsy Cornwell wanted to live in an old building full of stories. Last year, she found the old knitting factory near Carrow Row in County Galway, beautiful place, with views of the Mam Turks and 12 Bens. She has a dream to transform this building into a family home and an artist's residency space. When Norna Siggins met her on a windy day to talk about the building and her vision, she began by reading some of her work.
colour at the bottom is so deep, there are few who would call it blue. There is light there, a little, for those who can find it. It shifts in the water, a vague New England light. Just darkness, unless you look carefully. If you want real light, you'll have to stay on the surface. It's the shallow water you really want, what the old shoalers call the in-between. It's that space between light and blue, land and sea, where the water is sometimes warm. So I actually first came to Ireland to work on my first novel, which is a retelling of an old Celtic story called The Selkie Bride. Selkies are sort of seals that can turn into people. They're a bit like mermaids. And so I came to Galway to do some research after I finished my master's program in writing at Notre Dame. I now have 5 books published, and I have a 6th one forthcoming early next year. And for the most part, they are retellings of old stories. My second book was sort of modernized version of Cinderella, and my next novel that's coming out in 2022 is a sort of response to Jane Eyre. So they're not all fairy tales necessarily, but I am really interested in engaging with old stories and thinking about how they travel into the present moment. And that's something that I really love about the Knitting Factory, of course, as well, is it's an old building and it has a lot of history.
Yeah, some days it's like
so the building was built in 1906, and it was originally a lace knitting factory. And a lot of the women who came here, from what I've read, used the money that they earned here to emigrate to America. And that was something that's really touching to me as someone who's emigrated to Ireland. And then Bob Quinn, the filmmaker, turned it into the first Irish language cinema in the 1970s. And they had 60 people in every weekend watching Irish language films.
There were, of course, times when the kids were sleeping beside the projector. I don't know how they slept at all, really. I mean, they have all kinds of bang-bangs and everything else, and here was this thing. It must have been very interesting, actually, for the kids to see this from behind the scenes, you know, to see this is where films come from, you know. This projector is making a film, and I can hear it in there and see the projector.
And then that's one of the things about the Knitting Factory's history that I really love, is at every stage when it was, well, not when it was a knitting factory, but when it was a cinema.
I love you, Mommy.
I love you too. And when it was a jewelry studio, it was also a family home in both of those incarnations. And so I want this to be our home that we can share with other people rather than being just a residency space. It's both. It's a home and, you know, an art center, a community center. And that combination is really exciting to me. And I love that it's already part of the building's history. So, yeah. We had to leave our family home when my marriage broke down, and I started fantasizing about home ownership. So I started looking specifically for sort of strange old buildings that I could write about, and that's how I found the Knitting Factory. You know, I wasn't sure. You're always nervous about moving to a new place or moving to a small village, especially as an American, as an outsider, but people have been so welcoming here. Everyone I've met in Carrow has been really wonderful, and I'm learning a bit of Irish myself. I still don't speak it that much, but people have been very patient about that as well, which is great. Any big enterprise takes longer than you think it will when you start out, but my hope right now is that about half the time the space would go to resident artists, and the other half the time it would be available as an Airbnb type of space for tourists, for short-term guests.
Give us a smile.
Coral Beach is just a few kilometers that way, and which has been amazing during lockdown. It's a gorgeous beach, and I just sort of bring my kid there and set him off, and he runs around. You know. It's one of my favorite things about Connemara is the colors are different every day, and so I think it's such a natural place for artists to come and work, and whether they're writers or visual artists or filmmakers, or I would love to have some textile artists come here just because I think that's so in line with what the building was originally.
That was Betsy Cornwell speaking to Lorna Siggins. And of course, the story of the Knitting Factory's Cinema Days is told in the award-winning film by Robert Quinn, Cinegale Paradiso. You can find out about her plans for the building on www.betsycornwell.com, the old knitting factory /. Still to come on Countrywide, Ella McSweeney visits a micro dairy in County Mayo, and we meet the new president-elect of Machrane Pharma.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our March price calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
From Monday next, the 12th of April, we can travel within our county. Two households may meet outdoors and all of our children are back at school. There will be other changes as we move through the month. So let's stay local for April. Think safe, think outdoors, especially when meeting others. Ireland's vaccination programme is well underway. By staying safe now as the programme is rolled out, we will have more options in the coming months. Our national vaccination programme will pay huge dividends for our health and the reopening of our society. Let's work together and make sure that the worst of the crisis is behind us. Find out more at gov.ie/COVID-19. Supported by the Government of Ireland.
In this week's Business Post, can the government's remote working plan rejuvenate our town centres, or will it be another flawed initiative? And as Northern Ireland prepares to open up, what implications will it have for businesses in the south? Plus, don't miss your free copy of the beauty issue of Irish Tatler magazine, The Business Post. Buy in store or subscribe at businesspost.ie.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our March price calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
And this is Marty Morrissey with you this morning on Countrywide. And if you're just waking up, it's a cold, frosty, sunny morning. It's beautiful. Sinead Bourne and MJ McGrath are two young dairy farmers with 27 acres in County Mayo. They're one of a handful of farmers who've decided to build a micro dairy farm from which they will sell raw milk to their local community. Ellen McSweeney went to their farm, Glanbhui, outside Ahamore in County Mayo.
For this calf and bay, we don't actually have a water feeder. So I'm old school, filling a big old bucket that we used to make cider in.
How many years ago?
Look at cows.
Yeah. Well, now it's just plain water, and there's still like about 300 litres of cider up there somewhere.
And Jay, how many cows do you have altogether?
17. Yeah, 17.
Lovely.
There's about 12, just 12 milkers at the minute. They're not all calf down yet, and the other five are left over from when we had sucklers, but I hold on to them. So it's a bit of a transition program, like so.
And we're standing in your shed. The animals are here in front of us, just sitting down. They look very content. And Sinead, behind me, when I turn around, is your new micro dairy.
Yeah.
When did you finish it?
Finished is probably a bit strong of a word. We're almost finished.
We had this shed that's here behind you, which was a roof, and that was about it. Like, okay. So we built around that.
So you have the sheds, the animals behind, and then you have gates, and then you have this ramp. So we're going to walk up the ramp now.
Yeah, so you have the ramp. So the cows, they literally come up the ramp through this little gate here.
So we're top of the ramp, now platform.
The ramp.
Yeah.
And they come onto the flat platform then, and it literally takes six cows, one after another. So the cows just come in, and they line up six, one after another. We close the little gate behind them. And then you milk the cows from the lower level outside. So they're getting used to the setup now. So we let them out and we get the next two in, because we have a few heifers here that we're training up the first time as well and all that. Like,
that's a calm existence, I'd say. Now
two cows
that are good.
Yeah, it's manageable for men and beasts at the moment.
We're coming into the processing room now here. And so you have your bulk tank.
Into the bulk tank. Bulk tank cools the milk. We designed this place with the potential to do other products down the line. So we got a mini pasteurizer that's actually a yogurt maker as well, and we have a butter churn. All the bottles are here to be washed. So right now they're on shelves. So, yay! so we store them here, and then we would probably wash them in the morning to be bottled that day. We're really lucky. Before lockdown last year, we got a fridge van. And we just started delivering locally.
Okay. I just put this over here and put the fences up and bring the cows in. We use this first pin as the holding bay for the cows when they come in. And we bring the cows straight in here. So I just moved a bit of feed over to one side if there's anything left here in the morning.
And just first of all, tell me, what is a micro dairy? It's kind of self-explanatory,
It is, I suppose, yeah. Small. It's just a very small milk comparator.
Independent is definitely.
Yeah.
You know, we're not a part of any co-op, so there's no... It's pretty much us. We decide what goes in, what goes out. We decide prices, we decide everything.
So you haven't signed a contract with anyone?
No.
You control what comes in, you control what goes out. We'll only, at a max, given the ground we have here, we'll only be milking maybe 20 cows at the most. Literally milk it, bottle it, sell it, that's it.
And what would be then the price per litre you'd be getting?
We retail from the farm gate at €2 a litre. But the one condition we've always had here is we'll never go to a supermarket.
Why not?
Mostly because from having spoken with a lot of other artists and producers, when they've gone into the supermarket, prices generally only go one way and that's down. And we're not competing with that market. You know, we're not about cheap food. Because, you know, cheap food, it doesn't exist. Someone, somewhere, something always covers the price. So we'd sooner kind of stick with small independent stores who can share our story, connect better with the customers and explain why you're paying the price you're paying for this milk. We actually have one customer who insists on giving us £2.50 a bottle. Like, every week she gives it to us.
Why?
Like, because she thinks we're undervalued. You know, that's her understanding of it.
Yeah.
So
she thinks it's too cheap.
We've accepted to tie her up. She's amazing.
I know.
Yeah, no, we've never had anyone say, God is too dear. Or whatever, but...
And I'm picking up on a theme here with how you approach your farming, and that is control.
Yeah, we control what we put into the animals, as in feed. We don't feed meals or anything like that, unless it's Irish-grown grain. We don't use inputs like fertiliser or anything like that. So they're all, I suppose, cost-saving in one way, but it's not all about the money or saving cost in that respect. It's about the land and the environment and everything else as well.
And do you have ambitions to get bigger?
No.
Oh, no.
No. It's just happy out the way it is, like.
Right now I'm doing what I used to do as a kid, which is mind the gaps. I'm literally covering up any gap that the cow can go through. Because it's most of the few cows that we milked last year. And even though they were dairy stock, they never actually been milked. And we'd never milked cows. But thankfully, they were quite patient with us. And they fell into routine really, like, really fast.
So I'm looking at all the equipment that you have mm-hmm. and the micro dairy. When you went, presumably, you didn't have the cash. You went to get a loan and you went to get all this stuff. What was... the bank manager saying to you, what about the people who actually sell the equipment as well?
Do you know what? The bank manager was absolutely lovely, but unfortunately he didn't have the power over to lend to us, if that makes sense. They basically told us straight that we didn't fit the dairy template, and they had a template for the bank. That was pretty much then where savings came in. Microfinance we went to, and they were really good.
And what about getting the equipment? Because, you know...
naive, when we were looking for a milk machine... I started ringing around a few people about the milking machine, and the first guy I spoke to, and I said, look, and I'm just looking to get a quote for a four unit milking machine. And he's like, oh, 40. Yeah. Are you looking for a herringbone style, 20 each side or whatever? I said, no, just four. And he was like, did I hear you right? He's like, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I'll get back to you on that. Never heard a word from him again. So after that, we were like, okay, we're pretty much on our own here. And
the pipeline we did get, it's a second-hand pipeline, like, you know, and it's grand.
Yeah, fifth calf, and you get to see her every calf. And yet again, she's on the same. I just came down to check, and calf is up, dry, suckled, running around.
Congratulations. What did you have?
Heifer.
Lovely.
This lady. So she's actually our first cow and the first group that MJ bought in 2015. Because we don't have the scale, and I think that's kind of where dairy is going, and I think it's where agriculture is going. There's two agricultures developing. One is small, it's trying to focus in on local markets, direct connections, and the other is going for global markets, and that global market requires scale. We're always referred to as niche. I hate that word. It really, really bugs me. There's nothing niche about what we're doing. Like, we're really basic and really simple, and we just make sure our cows are content, our workspace is spotless clean and we produce good food and that's it. There's nothing niche about it.
I really like Sinead and MJ, Sinead Moore and MJ McGrath on their new micro dairy enterprise, and a lovely report as well by my colleague Ella McSweeney. Follow their progress on Glanbry Farm or check out www.glanbryfarm.ie. Now, my next guest this morning is John Keane, the new president-elect of Machrane Fermor. He starts his two-year term in a few weeks' time, but fresh from his election, he joins me this cold, frosty morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Marty, and thanks very much for having me, and good morning to all your listeners.
We are delighted to have you on Countrywide, and congratulations.
Thanks very much, Marty. It's been a fantastic week, a very proud week for myself and my family and my club and my region in Devil's Bit and North Tipperary, so a huge week, so...
Absolutely. Now, let me just talk a little bit about yourself, because the work obviously never stops in a farm. How did you break the news to your parents, Martin and Margaret, that you were thinking of running for the presidency?
I suppose, Marty, it was a conversation that we probably had over a number of months to, you know, given the time commitment that there will be with the role, that there'd probably be a significant hole left here on the farm when I was away. So, it was very constructive, and my parents have always been hugely supportive, and my family have been hugely supportive of me over a long number of years. So it was really good, and they were very supportive, and we're quite lucky here that we have great help from Liam. He's been with us working here for the last 3 or 4 years, and he's very much looking forward to taking on more responsibility and over the next 2 years. So a very fortunate position, really, Marty.
I've even heard about Liam, would you believe it, John? I believe he's your secret weapon. He's your main man.
Exactly. He's the man that'll make the farm continue to tick for the next couple of years. A hugely important cog of the wheel, and without that kind of support, Marty, it just wouldn't be possible. So we're hugely lucky to have Liam, and I'm sure he's tuned in, so we'll give him a mention as well.
Absolutely. Well, good morning, Liam, and well done, and fair play to you. And maybe we should do an interview with him so we get the real story.
Absolutely.
Of John Keane.
He might tell you a bit more about it, all right, yeah.
Tell me the story of the Keanes and their farm.
So my grandfather moved here to where we're farming in Ireland, South County Laois, back in 1971, Marty, and I suppose since then, my grandfather and my father have developed the farm over those 50-odd years to the dairy and beef enterprise that it is now. So a huge amount of work went in investment in buildings and in land improvements over those years. So I suppose when I came to farming full-time back in 2015, it was a humming machine at that stage with very little tweaking to be made because of all the progress that had been made over those years. So we're farming here a beef and dairy enterprise, and mainly black and white herd, and we're a full 100% spring calving system here at home.
So how many cows do you have? Or can I ask that question?
The million-dollar question. We're milking in around 100 cows, Marty, so we're a family farm. So yeah.
And you're the only boy, I know. Was it inevitable that you would take over the farm? Did you ever think of doing something else, like a 9-to-5 job somewhere else?
I suppose I have two sisters, one older and one younger, Marty, and we would always have been involved in farming all the way up along during our childhood, standing in gaps and running after cattle and that kind of stuff was always a mainstay of our childhood. So I suppose I just had a huge interest in farming always from a very young age, and it was something at the weekends away from school or during my summer holidays that I would have always been farming and had a huge interest in farming and a love for animals and I suppose a real love for being outdoors. So I suppose when I finished in secondary school in Our Ladies in Templemore, I went to UCD to study ag science for 4 years, and it really just cemented that interest in farming and I suppose love for farming and the business element of farming. And I was fortunate enough to have huge experiences as a result of that degree and an opportunity to travel with it also.
It seems natural then to get involved with Machrane Fermor. How did that come about?
I suppose through some of the lads I was in secondary school with, to be honest, Marty, inveigled me to go to a 7-a-side football tournament in Mungerton, County Limerick, back 6 or 7 years ago. And I suppose from there, the Machra journey really began in the back of a car going down on the motorway to a football tournament in Limerick. So that's how it started. And from there, the Machra journey began really within my own club in Devil's Bit, first and foremost, and onto my region in North Tipperary and onwards, I suppose, to the national roles, which I've been lucky enough to hold over the last 3 or 4 years.
What is the most important thing you've done with Machra? Tell us about that.
I suppose there's many highlights, is probably what I'd call it, Marty, over the years. I think the involvement in my own club, first and foremost, is probably something which I cherish, and the great friends which I've met through it, both at club level and at county level, is hugely important to me, and the support that they've been, not just over the campaign, but I suppose over the last number of years. And there's probably a few highlights. Myself and a few of my club mates in Devil's Bit cycled from Malinhead to Mizzenhead back in 2018 to raise funds for Embrace Pharma, a really worthy cause, and we were very successful, and it was a really enjoyable week to spend with them, and a great time to bond with them. And I suppose also in that year, my club and with the driving force of Jonathan Dwyer behind it, really, we established a mental health programme called Make the Move, an initiative in our own club first and foremost, and in our own region in North Tip. We've been lucky to receive support on that within our region, within the county, from the HSE and from Tip County Council to roll that out. So I suppose those are probably two of my highlights at club and regional level, and many other highlights at national level also.
Just emphasising there what you just said, or just highlighting it, why do farmers need particular support with their mental health?
I think, Marty, it's back in 2018, I suppose Jonathan came to our club and sort of identified that there was different stresses that are experienced on farm and in rural communities that are not necessarily replicated in other settings. And I think what came from those consultations that we had with over 400 farmers at the workshops which we held was the real breadth of issues that can affect farmers. And I suppose first and foremost it was the issue of isolation and loneliness came up time and time again. Financial pressures on farmers also came up. And I think, you know, being a farmer and I suppose associated with farming, you're trying to be all things to all people. On the one hand, you're an animal carer and you're trying to be a vet, and on the other side of things, you're trying to be a mechanic and a fitter and maintenance person. And another huge important part of farming now is in relation to the business element of it and compliance with, I suppose, all the legislation that there is too. So it's a huge skill set that one individual needs to have, and all the associated stresses and pressures that come with that. I think it's a very challenging role. It's very rewarding, but I think we as farmers, that conversation around mental health and the pressures that come on us all as farmers and as individuals is something we need to talk about, because at the end of the day, we all have a relationship with ourselves, and it's the longest relationship that any of us will have. So I think it's very important that we recognise that, and it's very important that we nurture that also.
Now, Thomas Duffy is the current president of MACRA. His term ends as yours begins, and certainly he joins us now. Good morning, Thomas.
How are you, Marty? How's things?
Not too bad at all. Now, you have to expect the unexpected as president. You didn't expect to be guiding the organisation through a pandemic, surely?
No, definitely didn't. And I suppose it fundamentally changed the nature of our entire organisation. And we had to look at all of our offerings and try to adapt them for the era that we're in. Ultimately, one of the major things, as John has highlighted in rural Ireland, is rural isolation. Mm. And MACRA has always been a key element of preventing that for an awful lot of people. And so then with the lack of physical in-person events and meetings and complying with the guidance, we had to ensure that people were still having some interactions. And I have to say, I can't take credit for the incredible work that our clubs and our counties have done to continue activity across the line. We did everything we could in terms of giving them guidance and giving them support when necessary, but really they were the ones that shone, and they were the ones that did so much work during this difficult time. We did revamp a lot of our national competitions, putting them online, and when allowances allowed, we came up with new ideas like the Puck Fada, and of course we gave opportunities as well to kind of focus on the policy side of the organisation, using Zoom and Zoom meetings.
So are there any other particular insights you'd like to share with John, since you're giving him advice?
I think first and foremost, I don't think John needs a huge amount of advice. He's an incredibly capable young man, and I've had the pleasure to work alongside him in the past, and I know John, and I know his advocacy around particularly the Make the Move, but I've served with him on Ag Affairs as well, so he has an incredible brief. I suppose for us, and during my tenure, some of my important elements really revolved around policy and expanding policy, and I know John will do an excellent job in continuing that and in spreading our voice. I suppose the element which I've learned really which is quite important, is not to be apologetic. I mean, young farmers' voices and young rural people's voices deserve to be heard at the table, and we have done everything we can to try and amplify that voice and strengthen it, but ultimately that needs to continue, and I'm sure John will be very capable of doing that.
I have no doubt, listening to him here on the radio this morning. Thomas Duffy, thank you for joining us. John, if I can end with you, because I know you're obviously going to be the president, you're a Macro member in Tipperary, but you play hurling in your home club, Rett Downey Earls. You're not going to have much time, free time.
I suppose, Marty, just to thank Thomas firstly there for the kind words and his stewardship over the last 2 years, and his presidential team of Sean Wallace, Jermahan and Fergus O'Rourke. Not an easy time for them to do their work, but a huge commitment shown, and they've definitely driven the organisation forward and left their mark. So a huge well done to them and all that worked with them. Marty, I suppose the GAA is something I've been passionate about since I was probably 6 or 7 years of age, and I've been lucky to be involved with our club in Rett Downey Earl for all of those years and hurl and play football with them. And it's something which I hope to continue even with the role in Macra. It's something which I thoroughly enjoy, and I've been very lucky to have success with it, and we've some absolutely fantastic people involved with the club, and I hope the manager might be listening in this morning, so he might give me a break off an odd training session if I can't make it. So
I feel that the Sunday game will have to cover at least Leinster club championship match Rett Downey Earls. John Keane, the very best of luck as president of Macra na Foirme. That's all we've time for this morning here in Countrywide. Today's programme was produced by Eileen Herron. Brian Moss was our broadcast coordinator, and Mark Dwyer was on sound. Coming up after the 9 o'clock news here on Radio 1 playback with Sinead Mooney. Thank you for listening. Have a lovely weekend. We're ending slightly different today. John Connell is a farmer whose books include The Cow Book and The Running Book. We started this morning with sheep in County Cavan and finished with John as he describes the lambing season on the family farm in County Longford.
Time is a strange thing on a farm. Everything is done in the past so that we can have a future. Every morning when I reach for the bale of hay to feed the sheep, I am reaching back to the summer, to the meadows that made this hay, to the sunshine which formed them. The sheep do not mind the origin of the hay. They care only for its sustenance, and they baa at me until it is in front of them. Each morning I wake and drive to the farm to be greeted by my father. The yard is full of noise and cries as I quietly begin my chores. Sometimes I listen to the radio, others I let my mind wander quiet and slow, waking up to the new day. The animals are always awake, no matter when I arrive. Sometimes I wonder when they sleep, but they follow different routines to ours, and the mind of an animal is in parts unknowable to us. In the upper sheds, the sheep are calling out to me, and I tell them now that I am coming. I walk to the upper part of the shed first, and tend to the mothers with lambs at foot. We keep them in a separate pen each when first they are born, so the mothers can come to know her babe, and in part two, so that we can keep an eye on the lamb to ensure he is feeding right. There are 5 mothers with lambs at foot in the pens. The lambs were born easily. But it has not always been this way. When we first got into sheep about 7 years ago, we put a big ram on the ewes, thinking bigger was better. That is, until the lambing fell to me, and I had to bring the tangle of legs and heads into the world, and so soon we learned that maybe life was easier if we put a smaller ram to the ewes, that vigour at birth was better than size. But that's how farming goes. You learn or you die, or rather the animals die, and you are forced to learn. If you don't, well, shame on you. Mother Nature gives us lessons every day, if only we care to see them. The ewes with lambs at foot call to me now for their hay, their feed and their water, and to each of them I say that I am coming, that the circle of the day is beginning again, and that they shall not go hungry. On the press, there is a picture of St. Francis painted on a simple wooden block. It is from Santa Fe and was given to me as a gift. I have been to where this woodblock came from. Out in New Mexico, near the Indian country of the Navajo and the Hopi, sheep are big business. The Spanish brought the sheep to that part of America, but the Navajo learned how to farm them best. As a traveller, I was able to bond with Navajo farmers, as I too knew the ways of sheep, that in their living and dying we knew the value of a lamb. St. Francis watches over the scene as I busy myself with the chores to hand. I feed the pellets to the ewes from the silo, and they all of them in their turn set to eating and end their crying. The lambs, seizing their chance, affix themselves to their mother's teats and suck the milk of life, and for a moment there is quiet in the shed. I cut open a square bale of hay, and pulling the sheaf apart like the chapters of a book, I give each ewe a helping of hay. They are too busy with their pellets to notice, but they will eat the hay later, and that will keep them quiet. In the lower shed, the ewes who have yet to lamb are still calling me, and I walk down to them to give them their feed. Taking the pellets from the silo and filling a bucketful, I pour it into their metal trough, and the ewes jostle and push one another to come to the feeding barrier. They are greedy and puck one another to get to the best point of eating. I try to tell them that they needn't worry, that there is food for all, but they don't listen. They are all of them full of their young, and in the days and weeks to come, there shall be, as my father says, a story with each. They are the makers of stories.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our Mart Price Calculator on farmersjournal.ie.